So welcome to the Women's and Girls National Coach Developers podcast. My pleasure to have with me this morning Joe Sheehan and Charlie Baxter. It's a pleasure to have you on, guys. If you want to just give everyone a quick insight to you and your coaching career at present, and then we'll get into the topic that we're going to talk about. Joe?
Yeah, thanks for having us, Mark. Good morning to you both. I'm Joe Sheehan. I work in a women's game. I've been part of the Essex RTC for the last 5 or so years, working with predominantly the oldest age groups, and naturally progressed into what is now the WSL Academy set up and the Women's National League, with Ipswich Town.
Brilliant, and obviously you've had a really great year, and we'll talk about that in a little bit more detail, linked to our topic today. But before that, Charlie.
Hi both. No, thanks for having me. I've been involved now with the women's game at Birmingham City Women now for around about 7 years. I started off in the RTC with the under-13s, and I pretty much work with every age group of that club now, and I've been with the first team for the past 3 seasons, and I was recently made interim head coach for the remainder of the last season. And that's kind of how my career has gone on so far in the women's game.
Brilliant. So part of the reason for having the two of you on is exactly that, Charlie. You've both got experiences of working all the way through the age groups, and I think that's what's really important with the work that we want to try and discuss and explore today with these podcasts is how we can transition some of the skills that you're seeing at senior level back into the age groups. And just singing your praises, the two of you, the reason that you're on this one is that everyone has talked highly about the individual work that you do with players and a lot of the passion you have about individual player development. So what I'd like to do today is just explore your thoughts and views around developing the individual in relation to out of possession, and especially in sort of 1v1 situations, because I think it's something that we, as a group of coaches and coach developers, we know it's something that we really need to focus on. And, you know, just want to explore some of your thoughts around that role in the first instance. So the question to you really is, right, why is 1v1 skills important to you in terms of coach player development? Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I think from a tactical perspective, the game has so much depth to it now. With so many new systems and strategies, types of pressing, and I think it means that the basics that become habits are now more pivotal to being flexible in how you want to structure your team. We've had encounters, throughout this season that's really highlighted, I guess, our vulnerable areas in really the details in defending 1v1 and being, you know, being pitted against some of the best players in the world has really exposed those kind of weaknesses. So, yeah, I think from an early age, if those basics can really be developed into habits, and it allows the natural development of a player really to progress through the age groups to then be able to, as I say, focus on things now where, from a tactical perspective, there's so much depth to play now and there's so many new ways of playing, and those kind of basics become so important.
And I think, Charlie, you know, just touching that, we often hear the term skills gap, and missing in skills gaps. And, in my opinion, there's some areas around this that Joe's just touched on that are crucial. How have you seen that change in your time then, from working with the younger age groups in the RTC up to sort of now working with Birmingham's first team?
I think it ultimately comes down to an understanding from, you know, the coaching side of things, of understanding of where these players are right now and where they're expected to be as the game progresses. The women's game has grown rapidly in the past few years. The level of athlete that I was working with when I first got involved with the women's game, not just from a physical perspective, but a technical, tactical perspective as well, has just grown tremendously. And that's credit to not only the athletes themselves for sort of putting in the work themselves and trying to be the very best they can be at their craft. But it's also the coaches that are now working in the women's game, who are bringing that sort of method to actually how do we get from A to C, but make sure we still take care of point B along the way. And I think because of that, you're seeing a real sort of growth in the care and consideration that's taken towards individual development in the women's game from those perspectives. Because at the end of the day, we've got to look at the women's game as a product, and if we want the product to be, you know, entertaining, exciting, and something that people want to buy into, it's got to be that. And you know, when we think of football and we talk about what we like about football, it's, you know, it's the skilled aspect of the game. It's the creative moments, the edge of your moment, you know, sit at the edge of your moment within the game. And that's where I think from me working in the game now and the cohort of people that I work with in the game now, that's where we want to take it. We want it to be entertaining. We want people to come and watch the game because, well, I'm going to be entertained if I go and watch a women's game this afternoon. You know, and I think that's really where it stemmed from, really, the commitment of the, you know, current cohort of players and coaches, really trying to push the women's game on and help it grow and become bigger and more exciting.
And I think that's great. And I think we're all in agreement that exciting creativity in the women's game is what's going to really express it and move it forward as a game. Unfortunately, the other side of that is, and Joe, and this is where I bring you in this with your experience this year of your running the FA Cup, that it's great having players that can express themselves and take players on in 1v1 situations and show real good athletic ability. The problem is you've got to stop that as well. And obviously your run this year has pitched you against some high-level teams where your team probably has had to focus on how you stop those players rather than being on the other side of trying to create those moments as well.
Yeah, a really valuable experience for us, but one that was very difficult to plan for because that's once in a blue moon type fixture for us, considering where we're at the moment in terms of our level. It did make it very difficult to plan for because we lacked the experience in how to deal with what we were coming up against. So we tried to.
So Joe, if I just stop you just 1 second, just for people that may not know, just explain what that experience was in terms of your progression in the FA Cup.
Yeah, so I'll take it back even further than that initially in terms of our WSL Academy team that's been sort of quite successful now for the last 2 years, where we naturally progress our academy players, predominantly our second years, into our seniors, playing in a women's national league. And we kind of committed that to them, that they've got an opportunity to create their own journey, really, to the ideally the top level, or as close as we can get. And we're committing our time and our investment to those to try and achieve that over 5, 6, 7 years. And this year was our first year of kind of drip feeding those in. Initially only a few, but we ended up, the Man City fixture was who we played. I think it was 8 players that were 18 or under in our starting 11. So we kind of really committed ourselves to our homegrown players within our region. And at our level at the moment, from a senior perspective, we're quite dominant. We have great ability, and we've got players that have had such successful pathways at various clubs that we've managed to sort of now bring in under our umbrella. So at senior level with those players, we've found ourselves being quite dominant. That's not saying that we know we're going to win every week, because that hasn't been the case, but we know that we will be quite dominant with possession. And we spend probably 70% of our time last year on doing that, because we kind of assume we're going to have 70% of possession. So the Man City fixture brought a whole new challenge to our game, because we didn't want to come away from what we are about too much. However, we had to be realistic enough to know we were playing one of the best teams in Europe, and it had been absolutely suicidal to go forward with something that was we were used to playing. So we tried to look at what we could do, and we fortunate enough to get the boys under 18s at Ipswich to be part of our planning for that. And we had to go through with a whole new approach because we knew we'd spend so much time without the ball. And yeah, there were many things that we knew we were going to be up against. And we tried as best as we can to prepare for those situations. But yeah, I think one of the things, or a couple of things we can take away from that is really looking at how the finer details can have such significant effects on the team as a whole. Because that's not because us as coaches or the players haven't developed well enough in those particular areas. It's just we haven't had the opportunities within our training sessions or games to replicate defending 1v1 against Lauren Hemp or Janine Becky or Georgia Stanway. So,
yeah,
you know, it certainly exposed the finer details, in even in terms of, you know, the angle of your approach to press or the lack of deceleration and overcommitting yourself. And on the other side of that, you know, from a psychological perspective, the ability to concentrate for sustained periods and be able to anticipate something, to react to it, to then try to intercept it, to compete, to tackle or force a turnover. And yeah, those are the kind of things that we've not been able to develop well enough, again, through no fault of our own, because we don't experience that on a regular basis. But yeah, it's certainly something that kind of exposed us. And we put a strategy in place, and, you know, whilst the scoreline was very, very heavy for the first 20 minutes, whilst we were massively under the cosh and, you know, we were finding it difficult to deal with Man City's threat, we were kind of okay. I don't think they had a shot in the first 20 minutes. It was only when we ended up getting a corner that they broke off the back of that and ended up scoring. So, yeah, I sort of come away from that experience and, you know, first and foremost, looking at the physicality that Man City posed, and rightly so, with players that are considerably older than ours and have more physically developed and play in a league that's much more intense. You know, from a physical perspective, we were a long way off, but we kind of knew that. And I probably underestimated how difficult it is to not just sustain those high concentration levels, but also how difficult it is to actually keep the ball when you do get it, when you spent so much time without it. And that those were kind of my learnings from it. And
I think from that, there's a couple of things that stand out in terms of what you just said there, and Charlie sort of working at that level for the last couple of years with Birmingham. The two things that really stand out, what Joe said to me around this idea of the concentration levels in terms of being able to sustain those ideas and developing their skills in 1v1s, especially from a concentration point of view, but also the exposure to the levels and pace of what top level football in the WSL needs. How do you get about that or work on those sort of things in your sessions with the players?
I think a lot of it comes from your due diligence in how you study the opposition and try and create as realistic scenarios as you can from what you potentially expect to face in the game. But there's also, you know, like Joe mentioned, there's also an approach that, you know, typically every team, every manager, every coach will have a sort of identity that they want their team to sort of work by and produce on a match day, and we're no different at Birmingham. And, you know, we very much like to, you know, possess the ball and sort of try and play through the thirds, but we try to be at Birmingham very adaptable to what the game has given us, and that means that, okay, we're going to play teams like Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City, who are probably the next step above kind of a lot of the teams in the WSL one, in terms of like the level of player they have, and their ability to prepare. Because of that, they're able to dictate their style of play a lot more than a team like we would be able to. So therefore, we have to really adapt to what challenges we're going to face. But at the same time, still appreciate where, okay, we may have to respect the opposition a bit more. We may have to adapt to what they're potentially going to throw at us, but we also have to recognise that we will have areas that we feel are really strong in what we do because of personnel that we have within our team, who can then equally pose, you know, Manchester City, for example, problems as well. And it's about getting that balance right. And that's a really, really tricky thing to do, because, you know, Joe makes a very good point. If you've never practiced it before and the players aren't used to it, then it's going to be a steep learning curve, especially if you're preparing for a game where you know that it's going to have to be a long time, where you're going to have to be setting up in mid blocks, low blocks, being really patient in how you block and screen when you're very much used to possessing the ball and maybe not having to worry so much about performing those sort of actions. So, you know, that balance is really, really tough to get sometimes when you come up against these teams that have that level where they can predominantly control the tempo of the game. And within that, you've got to find your moments where you can dictate the game to suit what you're doing and suit your players. And you also have to really understand your team as well. You really have to understand what are my group of players good at doing? What are we good at doing, both individually and both collectively? And actually, can we maximise as much as possible within the challenges that we're going to face? And that's, for me, one of the biggest headaches you can have as a head coach from week to week is how do we get that balance right? Because we want to respect the opposition, but at the same time, we also want to take the game to them because we're here to win as well. We're not here just to compete, you know. So it can be, yeah, like I said, very challenging, very tough to get that balance right.
And I suppose that's the thing with, although it's performance football and both of you are out there to win your leagues and the games on a regular basis, but there's still this degree of development, that next phase of individual development, team development, that's going to hopefully push you to that next level. So focus on the winning and your style and your principles is crucial, but we can never get away from, there's going to be moments where you're going to be that they've never been exposed to before. So my question really is just thinking about the fundamentals of defending 1v1, because however well you might play in a mid block, or you might be in a low block or a high press, ultimately it's going to come down to a 1v1 moment that will determine whether that's successful or not. So between you, obviously, what do you think then, if you're looking at your, let's say, your former selves as young RTC coaches with under 12s, 13s, and looking back, what would you say are the fundamentals now that we want our coaches to develop in our players to support defending 1v1?
I think from my perspective, so, did you want to go, Joe? Or
no, go on, Charlie, go on.
I think from my perspective, there's always been a key message that we've kind of really tried to promote at the RTC ever since I've been there, through the various sort of managers that we've had at the club since I've been there. And that's, we really want our players to be adaptable and really understand that the game isn't always going to be played in the way that you perhaps want it to be, i.e., I want to dribble with the ball a lot. Well, you might not be able to do that. You might have to have more of a pass-first approach, for example. And I think because of that, we've really tried to, use the mantra of let's develop football players first, and then we'll worry about the positions later on. Mm. Because if we can develop as much as we can, these fundamental attributes, both from a technical, tactical, physical perspective, then hopefully it better prepares the players in the future, because we don't know where their football journey will go. It's a little bit naive to think that all of these girls will start at the RTC and go all the way through to the first team. That doesn't really happen at the very top level. I think it's great what Ipswich are doing, but I'm sure still, Joe, there's some players that maybe don't always make it into that first team academy set up, because you're always going to have stronger players and you're always going to have to look to recruit areas where maybe you're lacking a little bit in terms of the team format. So that's really kind of the approach we've taken, and it's a more thorough and almost playing the long game approach we like to sort of promote at Birmingham. because we don't know how the careers, how the career path will plan out for some of these players. We have to be very attuned to how the game is evolving as well, because the game is constantly changing. It's a very dynamic sport, which is why a lot of us love it. You know, so the better that we can prepare players to possess, for example, the fundamentals, and the longer we take the time to work on that and give them, you know, the best opportunity to keep working and developing those areas of the game, then hopefully it will hold us in better stead in the future when it does get a bit more serious for them.
Joe, do you think that's improved over time? You know, obviously you've been involved with Essex RTC and obviously Ipswich for a long while now. And let's break it down into some real detail, you know, in terms of what you just said there, Charlie, the fundamentals. If we talk about the physical fundamentals, first of all, you know, we talk about agility, balance, coordination with young players, but in defending 1v1, being able to adjust your body, change direction and move backwards is a crucial skill. Do you think we have enough of that? And what would you encourage coaches to do to develop that?
Yeah, I think, you know, going back to when I first started within the RTC, and I think when coaches, you know, make their first step into the elite game or academy football, I think that your playing history or your influences when initially starting out as a coach can sometimes determine the type of coach or the key messages you look to promote. And I'd have certainly been guilty of being very lopsided and stronger in possession areas because of, again, influences and a playing background that focused on particular sides of the game. So I think now it's a little bit different. I think coaches are much more rounded now and, you know, being guided with philosophies from both England's DNA and the centre philosophy can really help underpin key aspects of the game for player development. And I think it has improved because, you know, there would be times when, you know, even coaching at the oldest age groups within an RTC, you'll come across players that, you know, still lack the basics and the finer details. I think it is improving and it is changing.
Just allude on that, and then what would you say are the specifics then? What some of the gaps that you're seeing that we can encourage people maybe to do more of that younger age group?
Yeah, well, I certainly think that linking up the technical principles and details of defending 1v1, and it has to marry up with all the corners, really, because, you know, from a psychological perspective, you know, the willingness to actually do it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to some players, particularly the younger age groups, you know, not everybody wants to compete, not everybody wants to tackle. So I guess the messages have to be really clear and help support players in having the willingness to do so. And from a physical perspective, yeah, I think we kind of assume that, you know, players are able to run backwards, are able to jockey, are able to run backwards and spin and go full throttle forward. You know, players are able to move sideways laterally, and, you know, we kind of forget sometimes that they still need refining because they influence the actual picture so much. So, yeah, you know, really working from a multidisciplinary approach is really key to that. Because, like you say, really, they are game-winning moments. They're so crucial. Games, particularly at top level, often won or lost in those key 1v1 moments. And I think we have to appreciate that so much that contribute towards it. And I think sometimes starting out as a coach, you can wonder why our players maybe get beaten too easily. We've had plenty of examples when we've had our wide players that might not decelerate well enough or might not see it quick enough, or their body positioning, their body shape, makes them too easy to beat or to play through. And the knock-on effect, as you'll both know, can be catastrophic, you know, with players behind that then can't see the picture to take up their position and the units behind that. And at the top level, you're punished. They sense the weakness and they see it so easily. So, yeah, I think from an RTC perspective, for coaches that are playing such a pivotal role in the players' development at younger age groups, it has such a massive impact, because otherwise, you know, you get to players that play at academy level or senior level at the top leagues, and if they haven't really nailed down those specifics at an early age, like I said at the start, really, with the game, how it's grown in such ways from a tactical perspective, and there's so many different systems and strategies, that habits become so important to allow that flexibility to take place. And it's so crucial.
Mm. I think one of the things there, and Charlie, come into this again in terms of the words you use, accelerating and deaccelerating, and sort of I have an athletics background as well, and one of the things that has always challenged my mindset when going in and supporting coaches within RTCs and WSL is that recognizing the technical skills of movement and how to plant the foot, move yourself forward, drive the arms, get that. But also, probably more important in this situation, is knowing how to brake and slow yourself down. And I think it's an area that maybe is undervalued at sort of RTC level at the moment.
I think the sort of conversation we're having there is a really interesting one, because you could almost look at it from a sort of much broader perspective in terms of what's the current climate like with our physical literacy skills of our young generation. And I think when I think about, you know, the RTC, and I think about, you know, this research that suggests that, you know, we focus on sport specific skills from an early age, it doesn't make them any more likely to succeed in that chosen sport than someone that has specialized in those sports specific skills later on in their athletic career. You know, and I'm very much for sort of, you know, I very much like to take the long approach, and I like to take the time. And if we're thinking about young athletes, young children, we have to be very conscious and attuned to where they're at in their stage of development, you know, both physically and mentally, and also socially. So, you know, for example, if we're working with under nine, you know, players, and, you know, the point you make there, Mark, is about someone, you know, being a good mover, understanding how to accelerate and decelerate. You know, it's a basic human function. Whether we're walking, running, jogging, we have to understand that in terms of, you know, and how we interact with the environment to ensure that we can perform those actions successfully. Do we take the time to really, in sport and in football in particular, do we take the time to understand that we're dealing with athletes first and then football players second? And actually, are we then attuning our work, our coaching, our development, you know, with in line with this sort of thinking? So, you know, one thing that kind of can frustrate me quite a lot when I see young teams or young players being coached is we're playing big games of, you know, up to seven aside with under nines. Well, you know, they're physically not capable to cover the sort of spaces that you might be playing in there. They're going to have limited touches on the ball. You know, yeah. Do we need to be doing sprint work with children at that age yet? You know, maybe that could come a little later on. Maybe they just need to learn, you know, the basics of how to move their whole body, you know, upper body in relation to lower body, you know. So I'm a big fan of the old school stuff like tag games and things like that. Ensuring there's a lot of contact, a lot of movement, a lot of different movement patterns and variations and things like that, that really sort of help young athletes explore the limits of their body where they're at. And I think coaches, in my opinion, really need to align to where their athletes are at in that sense to get the best out of them for the future.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And we could probably digress onto early specialisation and professionalism in terms of the women's game at the moment. And I really like the point you're making about going back to the basics. I wouldn't call it old school, Charlie. I think it's great teaching and learning that we're encouraging young players to develop fundamental movements through fun games that are sort of empowering them to make decisions, be aware of defenders and people. The key thing there that come out from that is actually all of those kind of games teach acceleration and decelerating without descriptively having to tell a player what to do. And the challenge for the coach then is to just pull some of that information out and make them appreciate that. Because, as you say, the 7v7 game will be great for some purposes, but it's maybe not going to teach things like the timing to get close and accelerate to get close to the player and then being able to stop, and because there's not enough exposure to that. And that sort of brings nicely into sort of my next question for this, is this whole balance when we're working on 1v1s and that individual development, the trade-off between being individual-based training to more game-based training. How do you two blend the two to get the best out of your players?
Yeah, I think I alluded to it at the start that probably around 70% of our training is in possession focused. And the reason for that is because that's how much we anticipate we will have the ball in games.
Yeah.
At the level we currently play at. And obviously that may change depending on how we kind of see things. But I think our 30%, if you want to call it that, are very much principle based on supporting the detail depending on the type of out of possession session that we might be doing. So very generic and not specific to a phase or an area of the pitch. So our out of possession work will sort of reinforcing key messages from both a principle and detail perspective, and again from physical, tactical, technical, psychological point of view. I think a lot of our finer detail that is more player and position specific is given to players on an individual basis, and that will depend on their IDP. And then what we will look to do is create those pictures within our practice for those to be experienced for the benefit of those players.
So what you're saying there, Joe, is that whilst a player might have an individual development plan around out of possession 1v1s, you're trying to explore that through games and make sure they're exposed to those moments in a game?
Yeah, so we will, and again, it doesn't necessarily have to be an out of possession session, but one thing we're always conscious of is whatever we're delivering, whatever the moment and whatever the topic, we will always look at what all of our players' IDPs are and work out, can any of those players experience what we've highlighted within this practice? And then we utilise our assistant or our supporting coaches, so Paige in our example, to monitor those individual players. And it won't be more than two or three per session. And she will sort of fly by coach with those players in particular, check and challenge throughout and measure really just progress whilst that's going on and carrying that into game days. And we'll support with reflection on huddle. So yeah, that's kind of how we do it. It might vary from player to player. And I think, you know, out of possession, there's what's quite difficult is to really replicate the same thing. So you have to be, I think, really clever in how you deliver your points, because you know, we might have a situation with rotation in opposition and players having to work out whether they lock on or pass on. Yet, you know, if we're too adamant with a particular message in the following week, it's 10 yards deeper, then that might not be the decision. So, yeah, it's really challenging in how we give a basic principle to what is required, but understand that how it might adapt. And I think that's why, you know, from our perspective, the focus has to be so consistent, because it can change so much. It's not one thing where you can go, right, you know, you've dealt with that really well now, that's it, you've signed that off.
Yeah.
It's ongoing because it changes so much, you know, and that would be why players that have play on opposite sides and inverted, you know, that it becomes another challenge again. So yeah, that's kind of how we do it. So we don't spend at the moment as much time delivering out of possession sessions to in possession. However, when we do, it's quite generic, and then there is always an individual focus for players that need to, or we think can get out certain pictures, and they'll be monitored by an assistant coach on a separate basis.
Okay, I've got a couple of things I want to pick up on. Before I do that, Charlie, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think from my perspective, it's from our sort of point of view at Birmingham, it's very, very similar to what sort of Joe's describing there in terms of how we approach things as well. We have a very much like a top-down approach. So we have, you know, based on how we feel we can best defend as a collective, you know, that's where we start. And then we sort of filter it down to the individuals. And then if we're looking at, you know, like, again, if we use Man City as an example, and we know that Lauren Hemp, for example, is a really good 1v1 player in wide areas, and we will then do our sort of homework on that. And then we will prepare the players that will probably likely be up against her in how to deal with that. And then, you know, the development aspect of that as well is that we'll always have sort of areas for our players across all areas of the field, from a defensive and an attacking perspective, of areas in which we want them to work on, improve and strengthen. Because ultimately, like, if you're a defender, you're probably going to be in the team. You know, if you're a regular, you're in the team because your defensive, you know, abilities and qualities. So we want those to improve and be even better, whilst at the same time, I want to appreciate that we still want to develop, you know, other aspects of people's games as well. But for me, it's always got to coincide with, it's got to benefit the team. So it can't be something that it goes off on a different tangent. We want players to develop, but players have to develop aspects of their game that coincide with the benefiting the team. You know, so that's something that we're really big on when we structure our IDPs and we look at how we're going to develop our defensive side of the game from a collective and individual perspective. But I think in terms of, if we look at how that looks in training, yeah, let's be really clear about something. Football is really quite simple when you look at it. It's attacking and defending, and then there's these little moments in between we call transition. So in any sort of practice, and I'm sure that it's the same at Ipswich with Joe, is that, you know, if there's a role for the attacking team and we're maybe focusing them in practice, there's still a defensive outcome for the defending team, and vice versa. When the defending team win the ball, they're now the attacking team, and the attacking team that have lost possession of the ball are now the defending team. So there's still that transition, there's still that outcome, regardless of what your key focus might be. And that's the skill of the coach or the coaching staff, to ensure that we're paying attention to every facet of the game, even though we might have a particular focus that we're trying to hone in on, but we're not forgetting, like, our core principles in and out of possession, for example. You know, and that would be kind of what I'd add to that, is that, you know, how many times, you know, I'd challenge coaches to think about their practice and say, if you're doing a practice, for example, which might be an attacking one, have you got an outcome for the defenders if they win the ball? You know, and vice versa, if it's a defensive practice, have you got an outcome for the attackers? Because that's the game, and we need to make sure we coach the game. Because if we're not doing that, then we're not benefiting the players, and we're not maximising as much of that learning that we could.
Yeah, I think there's two really good points, one from each of you there, that I'd pick up on. Charlie, that first one there about having whatever practice you're doing, and if it involves attack versus defence, you can have a defensive outcome. And we shouldn't forget, because often we go, as you said, Joe, we go more towards possession-based, in-possession stuff, because that's cool. That's what everyone wants to do. People are more comfortable with that stuff. But actually, to achieve that, you've got to have a team that's going to defend against you. So we can always build in that defensive moment with any practice that we do. And the second point, Joe, is what you made around this variability. It's too often we see generic 1v1 defending drills, where actually, as you alluded to, well, what happens if the team flip their wingers and they're inverted, and all of a sudden the player wants to cut inside rather than go outside? Are we exposing our younger players to these moments where they have to make decisions and have to make choices depending on what happens in that moment? And that sort of leads really into sort of the final part of around this, in this 1v1 idea around the psychological aspects. And we've touched a little bit on it around, you know, I think we use the bravery, but how do you build sort of mental toughness into your training around 1v1?
I think from our perspective, it starts with the foundations we built and the culture we try to create for everybody from both an academy perspective and a senior perspective. And there's not a lot of points, but there's some key points, some values and behaviours that we kind of expect of our players. And that might not be straight away. That might be something we have to develop. And the key playing behaviours really support what our strategy is and what our playing model is. And I think if we recruit players that kind of have that brilliant, if we sense that we need to polish it up a little bit in some, then that's what we will do. But yeah, we kind of think that the foundations we lay and the culture we create within our provision allows us to demand certain aspects of the game, both in and out of possession. It allows us to demand those psychological type traits and behaviours that contribute to our performance.
I suppose, Joe, it's probably quite hard for you at the moment where you're having so much success from a defending perspective, of building mental toughness when actually they're not overly being stretched or challenged and not probably failing that often.
Yeah, no, it is. And that's something we've kind of highlighted since last year. And we've brought a new format to how we measure winning and what success looks like for us now. So we've added more layers that, you know, we might, you know, deem winning as being scoring more goals than our opponents. But actually, we've added a lot more layers to that. And there's probably another 7 or 8 points where we will now judge what success and winning is for us. Yeah. And that will cross both in and out of possession. And I think what that allows us to do is reflect on the game and put it into a bit more context. So, yeah, in answer to your point there, yeah, we kind of recognise that there might be some games that don't challenge us as much, but now actually we're assessing our performance on so many more things, which allow us to kind of reflect on that.
And I suppose for you, Charlie, obviously you're going to have games and moments within the season where you're going to have some real highs, where you're going to have some good successes. But obviously competing against the likes of Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City, there's going to be moments where you're going to need some real mental toughness from a defending perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sort of going back to like the original sort of question you asked, Mark, I think it's very, I'm a big believer in sort of confidence normally comes from competence, you know, that's where we get a lot of our confidence from, you know, particularly when we're being asked to perform a certain action, you know, and if the player feels more competent in their ability to execute and perform at a certain level, that they're going to be more confident to showcase that and believe in themselves, you know, from a mental side of things. You know, and another sort of aspect that comes into that is, do you know your players as a coach? What are they good at? Maybe what are they not good at? And we have to be honest and real about that. And we have to challenge the players to think like that as well. And when it comes down to sort of 1v1 defending, or even defending collectively, it's, do I know, well, okay, if I'm up against this kind of player that is going to cut inside, you know, and then maybe try and cut outside again, or am I up against a winger that's a push and run sort of player, you know, am I going to match him in that race? If not, I have to think about how I can defend against them and use the skill set that I have, the qualities that I have as a player and a person to sort of outthink them. And it almost becomes a game within a game for me. And I constantly challenge our players to think about, well, what have you got and how can you get an upper hand in this situation based on the qualities that you have? And if you're struggling for that, then, you know, we know where we need to then maybe make improvements for you to be able to get to that point. Mm-hmm. And again, I ask the same questions, you know, to our unit, to the team, you know, how are we going to be best at defending? In your opinion, where do you think our strength can be maximised because of the qualities we have defensively and equally attacking wise? And you know, we have to really think about that and be honest with ourselves for the benefit of maximising what we can do in possession and out of possession. And I think that's for me where those sort of conversations start. And then once you sort of have a clear idea in your head of what that looks like and, you know, where we are with that, you can then really start to get to work on, well, how are we going to make it better? How are we going to maximize it on the training field?
And I think, sorry, on that, the whatever age group you're working at what your opposite number is doing and their strengths and weaknesses is something every player can do. You know, the first couple of minutes of the game of working out, does she go on the outside? Has she got strong on her right foot? Does she look to cut inside? If you can start to work those things out as a young player, and then you can link that to your strengths and work out a strategy of how you're going to compete against that player. And that's something I think we could encourage coaches to put in the minds of our players, more of observing their opposite player and working out their strengths and weaknesses from a defending perspective.
Absolutely.
Joe, did you have something to add to that?
Yeah, no, I was just going to revert back to really in terms of you asking around some examples of maybe situations last season. I know we touched upon the Man City fixture a little bit, and I think I'll now marry that up where we talk about the culture and the key behaviours that we want to try and drive within our players. And then that's where it becomes evident, because, you know, we had to go into that fixture believing we could compete and try and win, because that's what we've only ever done. But because we felt that we have a really strong culture, we have players that are fearless, because we needed them to be fearless, because we knew we had young players coming into a senior setup that were going to play more games than they ever have. With that become belief, you know, because they had success, so their belief is totally unquestionable. We needed them to be brave. We needed them to be bold in how they were going to try and impact the game. And that kind of carried us into that Manchester City fixture where, again, the scoreline doesn't truly reflect it, but the ability for our players to continue to work and run and press and you know, regardless of score and the timing, kind of showed us that actually the environment we've created and the foundations that we'd laid are evident. Because we didn't fold, you know, we were beaten because, you know, we were just out of our depth with the level of competition we were up against. So, yeah, I think the culture and the environment you set can really determine how your players perform when they're at their most uncomfortable. And that gave us a good opportunity to do that. And like I said before, is that, you know, how we tried to explore it in training is by matching us up against the boys, where they were going to play at a quicker pace than we were used to. We were going to spend large amounts of time without the ball. And we kind of knew from the experience of training with the boys that going into the game is, could we compete and potentially win? It was one in a million, but actually we could. Whether we could sustain the levels of concentration and the distances and the strategy well enough for long enough was something we had to find out. But we believe we could put in what we needed to put in. It's just whether we could sustain it or not. And obviously we couldn't. But that's kind of how we look to try and get it within our session.
But those experiences, Joe, from a collective as a team and as individuals will prepare those players for future challenges ahead of them, because they're going to grow as players. And that's what we have to remember. Everything that we're doing with our young players through to our seniors is providing experiences through success and failure to learn for the future.
Most definitely. And as I said, you know, we were kind of vulnerable and our weaknesses were exposed, because we'd never really had an opportunity to work on them to that extent, because we'd never faced a team like that.
No.
One thing that game showed us is what world class looks like, and actually how big the gap is for us and what key focuses we need to work on over the next 4 or 5 years to try and bridge that gap, because that's our aim now, how we bridge that gap. It allowed us to reflect and put it into a real good context and plan accordingly. Because, you know, when you're playing what you might think is well every week and winning games and suddenly you suffer a game, a defeat like that, it really allows you to reset and refocus and put new measures in place to try and increase the development pathway our players are on.
No, I think that's great, and I think we're all going to be really interested to see how Ipswich fare over the next couple of years. Right, I'm going to put you both on the spot now. A couple of very quick questions that maybe we haven't planned. If you were going to encourage a coach to observe a player within the WSL or even in the European World Leagues at the moment who is an outstanding 1v1 defender, who would you choose?
Poor, that is tough.
Lucy Bronze.
All right, good shout. I think that, you know, that would be quite close to a lot of people's lists. What then, Joe, very quickly, one attribute that Lucy's got that makes her an outstanding defender, 1v1?
Aggressive. I know you asked for one, but physically a machine. And obviously has a mindset where she's confident and aggressive enough to make her decisions.
Yeah, so we'd encourage coaches to analyse what she does and how she does it. Charlie, any trumps on Lucy?
Not necessarily a trump, maybe just a different perspective. I'm going to be a little bit biased here. I think Keris Harrop, you know, our club captain, I think Lucy Bronze is sort of everything you want in a football player. Let's not beat around the bush. She's one of the best players in the world, one of the best players to ever play, you know, in the women's game. But I think we look at someone like Kez, she gives a bit more sort of I guess some people might class her defending as a bit more rugged. But there's a lot of detail to be sort of really gained from watching how she does defend. You know, the little sort of, you know, defending for me is an art, and it's at times not a perfect art. And there's, you know, a few little things here and there that, you know, people might question, but it's effective. You know, the little sort of moments where you just add a little bit of a push at the right moment, just to off balance your attacker and things like that. And Keris is very, very good at that side of the game. And that's why she's played at the top level for years and years and years with great consistency. Not, you know, I don't want to sort of make comparisons, but maybe just offer a different sort of perspective.
No, I think that's brilliant. I think, like you say, we can always go to names that everyone can always relate to in the world game. But like you say, there's players that have been in the game for such a long while, and they've been there because these attributes have been there and they've really worked hard on them. Fantastic. Last question then. If you were mentoring a younger coach within the RTC that's working with your 10s, your 12s and everything, what's your one bit of advice around encouraging them to work on 1v1s defending? What would be your advice to them?
Just be curious with detail. And I was someone who was kind of like that, but from a technical perspective in possession, you know, really wanting to refine receiving skills and how to manipulate football. Those were kind of my influences growing up, and those kind of things I paid particular attention to because it really interested me. I was curious. I wanted a real breakdown, the finer details to it. And I know I'm slightly going a bit off topic here, but, you know, someone who's myself as the odd golf lesson, and I'm often fascinated by the detail that my golf coach is able to work in, you know, from analysis and some of some of the things he puts in place to refine my golf swing blows me away at times. And I think that, you know, for coaches that are wanting to progress and be the best possible coach they can be, I think really being curious and finding new ways to explore, to really refine detail, is something that I really enjoyed doing, but maybe wasn't rounded enough when I first started and have since become that. But I would say that.
Yeah. So observe, reflect on the detail, explore how then you can work with players to develop that.
Yeah.
Cool. Charlie, last thing from you.
Yeah, I'd certainly echo Joe's points about being really studious about the game and constantly, you know, analysing the key trends and what's going on in the game to really sort of develop your own craft knowledge as a coach, because players are going to call on you to have answers and you need to be able to provide them if you're going to be able to help them as much as you can. But I think the biggest thing for me is really, really understanding who you're working with, where are they at, what's their, you know, age and stage, their ability. These things are really key and important for me. And let's not get into a habit of overcoaching as well. You know, for example, you know, if we're talking about 1v1 defending and we've got, you know, we're looking at a player that is, you know, maybe in our opinion, from a coach's perspective, well, that's not out of the textbook, that's not out of the manual. But you know what? Is she having success? And is it consistent success with that approach? then actually maybe we don't need to look at that at the moment. Maybe we can just, you know, allow that to be until a moment where we feel like, okay, maybe now we need to add something. And I think that's where, you know, again, going back to it, knowing your players, knowing where they're at and knowing what they need and what's most important for them in that stage of their development, that's the key for me. And that's really hard to do. You know, I'm still working on that now and it's not perfect. So, but that's what I definitely encourage coaches to really think about and work on.
Yeah, no, I think that's two really good points to finish on. Understanding your players, whatever age group, whatever level they are, the better you know them, the more then you can explore with them the detail that's needed to improve them as individuals. Chaps, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for coming on to this. I want to say good luck for the new season, and I will. We just don't know when that might start. But thank you very much.
Thank you.